Senate will be in order. Will everyone in the Senate and the galleries please rise for the prayer by the chaplain, the Reverend Gock, and remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
From the 61st Psalm we hear, "Let me abide in your tent forever, find refuge under the shelter of your wings." We are thankful for your abiding presence and bringing us safely here to do the work that you would have us do. We are thankful for time this day to work and enjoy recreational time together that strengthens relationships and bonds of friendship and our serving together. And we pray that we may know comfort in knowing you and what you require of us. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Senators Brown, Chappelle Nadal, Cunningham, Curls, Dixon, Igel, Emery, Hageman, Holzman, Hoskins, Hummel, Kehoe, Koenig, Kraus, Leibla, Munslinger, Nasheed, Onder, Richard, Riddle, Rizzo, Romine, Rowden, Sater, Schoff, Schatz, Shoup, Sifton, Sylvie, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson, Whelan.
Senator from the 15th. Senator from the 14th. Quorum being present, the Senate is in session. Madam Secretary, please read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, first regular session, ninth day.
Call, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as though having been fully read.
The Senator from Cole has moved that further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as fully read. Does any senator desire to be heard? Seeing none, Senator from Cole, you're recognized. Close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close.
Those of the opinion that the motion shall prevail, say aye. Those of the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Introduction of guest. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. It's my pleasure to introduce a very special guest, Mr. President, because today is his birthday. And you might know him as J.O. Rackers, but since we're in the middle of introduction of guests, I thought maybe we'd have an introduction of a birthday guest, because not every day is J.O.'s birthday. So if the Senate would join me in welcoming J.O. to the Senate and wish him a happy birthday today.
Let's welcome J.O. a happy birthday. Introduction of guest. Senator from the Cape Girardeau.
Thank you, Mr. President. On my right and your left, I have a very special guest, Ethan Scheer. Columbia, Missouri. He's a new student. He's majoring in minoring in political science, and when he graduates this May, take his LSAT and become an attorney. Please welcome.
Let's please welcome the guest from Cape Girardeau. Introduction of guest. Introduction of guest. Petitions, memorials, remonstrances. Resolutions. Concurrent resolutions. Introduction of bills. Senator from Phelps, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a bill and no explanation needed at this time.
Please send your bill forward. Madam Secretary, please read the bill.
Senate Bill number 323, introduced by Senator Brown, an act relating to the operation of motorcycles or motor tricycles.
Introduction of bills. Senator from Clay, what purpose do you rise?
President, thank you, Mr. President. I have a bill. No explanation necessary.
Send your bill forward. Madam Secretary, please read the bill.
Senate Bill number 324, introduced by Senator Silvey, an act relating to personal flotation devices.
Introduction of bills. Senator from the 8th, what purpose do you rise?
I have two bills. No explanation necessary.
Please send them forward. Madam Secretary, please read the first bill.
Senate Bill number 325, introduced by Senator Krause, an act relating to sales and use tax exemptions.
Madam Secretary, please read the second bill.
Senate Bill number 326, introduced by Senator Krause, an act relating to low-profit limited liability companies.
Introduction of bill. Senator from San Francois. Two bills?
Two bills.
Please send them forward.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Madam Secretary, please read the first bill.
Senate Bill number 327, introduced by Senator Romine, an act relating to course access in education.
Senator, would you like to explain the bill?
Yes, Mr. President. This is a bill and the result of the Higher Ed Advisory Council that went over the summer trying to make it better for our constituents to be able to acquire higher ed degrees and bachelor and doctorate degrees, and look forward to the debate that we'll have on this, an opportunity for our constituents to have a better opportunity to access degrees.
All right. Thank you, Senator. Madam Secretary, please read the second bill.
Senate Bill number 328, an act are introduced by Senator Romine, an act relating to higher education.
Thank you, Mr. President. No explanation needed.
Introduction of bills. Senator from Cole, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I have one bill and one bill only. I will send it forward with no explanation needed.
Please send your bill forward. Madam Secretary, please read the bill.
Senate Bill number 329, introduced by Senator Kehoe, an act relating to motor vehicle franchise practices.
Introduction of bills. Senator from Lewis, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I have one bill.
Please
one bill,
your bill
only,
forward.
With no explanation needed.
Thank you, Senator. Madam Secretary, please read the bill.
Senate Bill number 330, introduced by Senator Munslinger, an act relating to liability under workers' compensation laws.
Introduction of bills. Senator from Andrew, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I have two bills. Neither require explanation.
Please send your bills forward. Madam Secretary, please read the first bill.
Senate Bill number 331, introduced by Senator Hageman, an act relating to confiscation of animals.
Madam Secretary, read the second bill.
Senate Bill number 332, introduced by Senator Hageman, an act relating to the timeliness of tax payments made by postal mail.
Introduction of bills. Senator from Buchanan.
I have a very important bill for the citizens of Missouri.
Please send your bill forward. Madam Secretary, please read the bill.
Senate Bill number 333, introduced by Senator Schauf, an act relating to retirement benefits for certain state employees.
Do you care to explain the bill, Senator?
Mr. President, this bill has to do with the vesting of our former retirees. Thank you.
All right. Introduction of bills. Senator from Barry, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a bill.
Please send your bill forward. Madam Secretary, please read the bill.
Senate Bill number 334, introduced by Senator Sater, an act relating to influenza education.
Senator, do you care to explain the bill?
Mr. President, this has to do with education for influenza vaccinations. And I would like to point out that the city of Everton, their school, closed down because of the flu today. And so this is a major concern right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Introduction of bills. Senator from Johnson, purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I have a bill. No explanation is necessary.
Please send your bill forward. Madam Secretary, please read the bill.
Senate Bill number 335, introduced by Senator Hoskins, an act relating to service dogs.
Introduction of bills. Senator from Newton, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Please refer Senate Concurrent Resolution 9, Senate Concurrent Resolution 10, the Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics. Please refer Senate Bill 269 from the Committee on Transportation, Infrastructure, Public Safety to the Committee on Professional Registration.
Both bills will be referred. Senator from 7th, what purpose do you rise?
Oh, and a personal privilege.
Proceed, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President. Yesterday, we heard the sad news that the Kansas City community has lost a promising young person in the picture of Yordano Ventura. He was a competitor. He brought a lot of spirit to the team. He was a part of our great success in 2015 and 2014, and his loss will not only impact the baseball club on the field, but the community off the field. The Kansas City delegates will be doing a resolution for his family. I invite any senator who would like to sign on to that to let me know sometime this afternoon. And would just ask that the Senate recognize the contribution that Yordano made to the Kansas City area and just take a brief moment to appreciate his life.
Let's just take a moment of silence for the Kansas City Royals pitcher. Thank you. Thank you, Senator. Introduction of bills. Introduction of bills. Seeing none. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Is there any kind of admonishment for a new senator who doesn't sign his bills before he tries to send them forward?
Seems like we have that trouble every year, Senator.
Certain senator from a certain county seems to continue that tradition. Mr. President, without objection, the Senate will go the order of business of Senate bills for perfection, formal calendar, and I'd ask that you call the calendar.
Senator for Cole, ask for unanimous consent for the Senate bills to go for perfection. Hearing No objections. The Senate will go to the formal counter Senate bills for perfection. Senate Bill 19, Senator Brown. I'm sorry, Senator Phelps.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Bill number 19 be taken up for perfection.
And Senator from Phelps moves that Senate Bill number 19 be taken up for perfection. As many as are of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it.
Thank you, Mr. President. I now move that Senate Bill 19 be declared perfected and ordered printed. And, Mr. President, I have a Senate substitute that I would like to send forward. It has been distributed, and I move for its adoption. Mikey. Let's get this baby adopted. No, I just want to get it adopted.
Senator, you're requesting a waiver of the reading.
I'm requesting a waiver of the reading because it has been distributed and I move for its adoption.
All right. Sending your substitute forward. Hearing no objections, the reading will be waived. Do you care to move for the adoption and explain the substitute?
I move for the adoption of the substitute, and I will explain the substitute. Senate Bill 19 is a right to work or freedom to work bill that we've heard and I've carried for a number of years. I think everybody's pretty familiar with right to work. What the Senate substitute does is it puts in a grandfathering clause. In other words, those contracts that are in effect when this bill goes into a law, they stay in effect until that contract has reached fruition or maturity. And then they can no longer, right to work then does apply, and they forced unionism can't be a part of it. So, you know, reforming union law in Missouri is a pro-worker, pro-transparency, and pro-taxpayer law. Right to work affirms the freedom of every American to work for a living without being compelled to belong to a union. Missouri is a forced union state. If we pass right to work and it gets signed into law, we will be the 28th state to have right to work. All of our surrounding states but Illinois are right to work. And, you know, we've discussed this many times, and there's people very passionate, both sides of the issue. You know, I could go on for quite some time about why I personally think that it does help economic development and creates more jobs in Missouri. I would say that 25 years ago, right to work would have probably truly brought more jobs to Missouri. That's when Toyota, Nissan, BMW, Kia was looking at states to set up business in, and probably their top three asks for site selection was, are you right to work? And, of course, we were not. Therefore, they're in Alabama, Tennessee, Georgia, states that are right to work. So it doesn't give us the leg up that it would have given us 25 years ago, but I argue at this point, if we're not right to work, then we're no longer even being considered. It's almost a matter of survivability or being able to level the playing field a bit to where we can be considered by site selectors. And I think that as we see our populations decreasing, and people working in states surrounding us, even a lot of our union shops are working in right-to-work states. And most states that have passed right-to-work, because the unions become more agreeable and they do a better job representing their union employees and the people that they represent, and we see a lot more jobs going on, more building, just more economic activity, they tend to increase the number of their labor union members because they are being more agreeable and helpful and actually doing something for them. So right to work is actually freedom to work. And like I say, you're going to hear arguments both sides of the issue, and I understand that. I have dealt with the unions over the years, and I understand where they're at, and I think they kind of understand where I'm at. So with that, Mr. President, I will try to answer questions, or I will listen to the discussion that may be opposed to where I'm at.
I think that does any senator desire to be heard? Senator from the 7th, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire the handler of the bill.
Senator, do you yield?
I do.
You may proceed.
Thank you, Senator. We had this debate 2 years ago. Was that the first time that this bill made it through this chamber, 2014? Is that correct?
I think that's right. I've handled the bill for about 6 years, but that may have been the first time that it actually came up on the floor.
Okay, so tell me, before we get into sort of the meat and potatoes of the legislation, tell me a little bit about the difference between the sub that you dropped and what was initially filed. What changes have been made?
There's only one change. If you look on the last page of the bill, Section 5, under subsection 7. Section 5 is the change under sub 7, the very last statement to the bill. And it says, to any agreement between an employer and a labor organization entered into before the effective date of this section, this bill, shall apply to any such agreement upon its renewal. Extension amendment shall not apply. In other words, after the contract is completed, the contract will stay in effect. It's grandfathered in until the end of that contract, and then this law applies. But in other words, we felt that it was probably proper to honor those contracts that were in effect now.
This is a little bit of a grandfather clause for
it is
for those who are currently
right
under a work contract.
And most of the right-to-work laws that have gone into effect since Oklahoma right-to-work law have had the grandfathering clause. There's arguments that it doesn't have to be in, that the courts, there's been some court cases, but it wasn't clear that that there might be a challenge and there may be good standing for that, so that's why it was felt by different people that we should add it in.
Okay, so
all
what's
of
the
them have had.
What do you envision the time frame for all of this going to affect then? I mean, absent, there's no emergency clause in this, correct?
No.
Absent that, we're looking at August 28th for
right
it to take effect.
Right.
And so if there's an existing contract that is already meant to go past August 28th, this provision would allow that to stay in place.
Right. This law will not affect that contract until that contract is finished. Now, I will be very honest with you. Some states, Michigan probably being the most recent example, some union halls have gone out and tried to negotiate really long-term contracts, you know, kind of ridiculous long-term. And most employers aren't doing that. They're doing their normal 2 to 3 year contracts. Some of them maybe have gone out to 5. So I don't look for there to be a big rush to do a 20-year contract.
We've had some discussion around the penalty provisions. You have criminal penalty provisions in this language here. Is that correct?
Well, it's kind of misdemeanor penalty provisions, and it does give a person that feels they've been wrong an opportunity for civil reimbursement.
So would those criminal provisions apply in the instance where this grandfather kicks in? If it's an existing contract.
After the After the contract has matured, yes. Prior to, no, I don't think so.
Did any of the ones in Michigan that you referenced, did any of those ridiculously long contracts be entered into because the employer wanted to have the union shop?
That I do not know. In my mind, that's between the employer and the union.
How do you feel about...
If they want to do a 20-year contract, that's their business.
How do you feel about those employers who have testified that they want to have a union shop, a closed shop, be their partner for a variety of reasons, work safety, work product, the quality of the overall work? What is your response to that?
Well, and my response is there's nothing in this bill that will prevent that or prevent them from doing business. And in federal law, there's case law that supports the fact that the union does not have to represent free riders, only their union members in negotiating contracts, and the people that choose not to be in the union can negotiate their contracts. So there's nothing in this bill that will prevent that continuing situation.
How often do you find yourself advocating for someone receiving a service without having to pay for it?
It related to what?
Related to contract negotiations. So if someone's going to collectively bargain on behalf of somebody else,
right,
and they're trying to improve that contract, improve the pay, compensation, benefits, safety requirements, those types of things, and then this would free the individual from having to pay for that service, how often do you find yourself advocating for someone to receive a service without having to pay for it?
I guess I find myself advocating mostly for people that's paying for advocacy on some of these situations, but it never occurs. It never happens. Last year or year before, I read a email on the floor from a gentleman in Rolla, and his name and the union or where he worked was redacted. But there was like 300 employees at this shop. Card check was done, and they become unionized. And over the last 8 years, he had spent about $12,000 in union fees, and they.
What was the time period on that?
It was like 8 years.
So 8 years, he pays $12,000 in union fees.
Right, and they never had a meeting,
okay.
and they did have some concerns as people that worked in that shop on some safety measures. So, I think that right to work, if that shop stays unionized and doesn't decertify, I think you're going to see the union people much more responsive and getting down there having some meetings and talking with these folks.
Typically when we have legislation brought forward, we're trying to solve a problem.
Right.
And we have had our collective bargaining conditions in place and have been a union state for the better part of, I'm not sure when exactly, it came to be, let's 70 years.
Right.
What is the problem? What is this solving? What do you envision
this
as being the problem with the way we have it today?
This solves forced unionism.
Okay.
That's all it does. In other words, you do not have to be a member of a union in order to be able to work at the workplace you're working. And that's all the bill does. And I hear a lot of arguments that differ from that, but when you boil it all down, that is what it does. And do I hear from people? Yes. And I hear from a few that support forced unionism, but the majority, a large percent of the people in my district, do not support forced unionism. Now, they want to be able to unionize if they want to. So that's why I say this is more a matter of freedom to work. I think the moniker right to work sometimes is wrong because I just think there was a time and a place for labor unions. There still is. And I just think we have to be respectful of that. We're not forcing people to do something that maybe they haven't totally been convinced is a good idea or that they want to be a part of, but they have felt that they had to be, or they would lose their job.
Well, we can't disregard our history and how we got here. So
right.
you brought that up. Why do you said you made the statement that there was a time and place for unions? Why? Let's go back to that time. What was going on then that you would justify and say, yes, that is an appropriate place to have collective bargaining?
You know, I think in the and probably there's collective bargaining that goes on now without a union being in place. You know, if you want to go to your employer and you know, lobby or bargain for a better wage, you're certainly free to do that. You don't have to do it as a group if you're in an open shop. If you're in a closed shop, then you've got to do or follow the lead of your union leaders. So, you know, back in the Industrial Revolution when things were moving very, very fast in America, when we became as great as we were, workers were probably being overworked, too long hours and in unsafe conditions, and I think that's why labor unions were brought forward. Now, do I think there's a big problem with that today in employers that are not unionized? No. Now, maybe some of those folks disagree with me. They think they should be paid twice as much. So that's why I say I understand both sides of the issue, and I've listened to the arguments a long time, and you guys make great points. I hope I make an occasional decent point.
What percentage of our overall labor force is unionized? Do you know?
I think it's about 8% now.
That's the statistic that I've seen most recently, about 8%. Do you accept that 8% of our workforce has a greater impact on the mean wage for everyone else that's in the 92% of the labor force that's not in that 8%? Do you think there's a correlation there? Do you think that the mean wage for the 92% of labor that's not unionized is impacted, plus or minus, on the 8% that is unionized?
Well, I think that's a different discussion than right to work. You know, it does have a huge impact in the form of prevailing wage law. But that's not what we're discussing here.
No, it's not. And I think that they're connected, though, because when a right to work law gets passed, then the amount of support for the collective bargainer is now in jeopardy because you no longer have to pay for the service of the bargaining. And through that collective bargaining process, those wages are increased. The worker safety is discussed, that part of the contract. And when you weaken an ability to collectively bargain, then you're weakening that 8%'s ability to be compensated properly. And if that 8% is not being compensated at the level, that's when the 92% of laborers are going to feel the change from the statute.
You know, I just had a gentleman tell me over the weekend that his son was a union worker in Southwest Missouri, and he just got a job in Kansas, which is a right-to-work state with no prevailing wage law, and he was making $13 an hour more than he was in the union job he left in Missouri. So, you know, and there's a lot of examples. A lot of the employers that were union shops in committee were actually doing jobs in Kansas and Oklahoma and Texas, which are right-to-work states with no prevailing wage law. And we ask them in committee, well, do your workers get paid closely to the same? And he said yes, that there was a lot of work going on in those states, and it was pretty competitive and pretty aggressively bid, and there was not much difference between what they were getting paid in those states.
I don't think that it's not my point to argue that right-to-work states can't have contracts that compensate workers equitably. I'm not saying that cannot happen. Yeah. But what we have seen, how many states have right to work now? Is it
27, would be 28.
27, we'd be 28. But what we have seen statistically is that the average worker who's non-unionized makes about $5,000 less in right to work states. And to me, I think that you and I both could come up with anecdotal evidence. We could come up with stories of individuals who have benefited from.
And I can come up with statistics that would discount what you're saying. And so, you know, liars use statistics, and everybody uses statistics. You know what I'm saying? So,
and I accept
that. I don't
know
how accurate some of them are.
I accept that. So what happens if? So I, you know, elections have consequences, and we've all understood that this debate was coming, and the outcome is probably not in terrible doubt of how this is going to go. But what if you're wrong? And let's say 18 months, 24 months from now, it doesn't lead to more job growth in the state of Missouri, and the mean average wage does go down by a measurable difference. Is that something then that you would be willing to discuss on a repeal of the statute if it doesn't work?
Well, I think that discussion will continue quite a few years. We've had 70 years plus of forced unionism. It's probably time we try this idea a bit. It seems to be successful in surrounding states. And my argument is that if we don't do this, how do we level the playing field, or how do we even remain competitive when Missouri and Illinois are sitting there that are strong union states and forced unionism, and we're losing population? And so I'm willing to give it a shot, and I would be willing to admit that I'm wrong.
Did you read the article in one of the state cities' publications about comparing this to not paying your golf club membership dues, that the country club that provides the services shouldn't be allowed to force members to pay their dues to play golf on their country clubs? Did you read that article?
You know, I read part of the article. I did not study the article because I really didn't agree with the article, because I guess I go back to my argument of Nissan, Toyota, BMW, Kia are all in right-to-work states, and some of those states have no prevailing wage law, and those employees are getting paid very comparable to union members.
And none of those are American-made vehicles.
Yeah, do what?
I said none of those are American car companies that you just named.
Well, they're all made in America. And Ford's made in Mexico or Canada. Chevrolet's made in Mexico or Canada.
That's true.
And I drive a Nissan truck, and it's built in Tennessee by American workers.
That's true.
And, you know, is that a bad thing? I don't think so. Do you want to drive a Ford from wherever they're made this year? But
I just know the high quality of product that the UAW member puts out at the Ford F-150 plant in North Kansas City.
Right.
And I would put that quality up against any manufacturer in the world. And that's right here in the senator from the 17th District.
Right.
And so.
And I'm glad it is here. And I wish that some of those weren't being built outside the borders of the United States. But I'll tell you, the quality control on the Nissan, the Toyota, BMW and Kia, I don't know as much about, but they're pretty competitive, you know. Some people will argue much better. And so anytime someone says, well, this is a foreign company, well, it's not a foreign company, it's building it. It's built by people in Tennessee. A lot of people in Tennessee drive Nissan and Toyota.
Right. Some Toyota's built in Kentucky. I mean, I'm not arguing that point. This is a pretty significant change, though, don't you think? From the way we've done it for 70 years, this is going to lead to more job growth and more site selectors picking Missouri now that, you know, we're one of 28 states.
Yeah.
I assume you think that we'll have an advantage over the other 32 that are
right to work. I don't know that we're going to have a great advantage, but I think we have to level the playing field. You know, if we were the first state to try this, I would say your argument of what's going to happen in 2 years is a more valid. We're the 28th state, and it seems to work pretty nicely in states that's moved forward on this. So I'm certainly excited about giving it a try.
What happened last time this legislation was placed on the ballot in front of the Missouri voters?
I think that was in 1978. It failed. I think there's been quite a change in attitude. You know, I actually had two gentlemen that have passed away now that was in my practice, my veterinary practice area. And one of the guys was a union employee from St. Louis, and his brother was a farmer, and they lived about a half mile from each other. And they got into it at the polling place over Right to Work in 1978. And they never spoke to one another for the rest of their lives, and they both lived to be almost 100 years old, and they were young men at the time. It was over 40 years. They never spoke as a result of the fight.
Well, I hope that doesn't happen with you and I.
Oh, no. You know, you and I can't get around talking about something.
Well, Senator, I think this is a pretty big change in the way that we've been doing it. I don't see a problem in the way that it is currently structured right now. You can choose to be a part of that 8%, or you can choose not to be a part of that 8%. And if you do choose to be a part of that 8% of the unionized labor in the state of Missouri, then it comes with certain responsibilities in paying your membership dues. I was a member of AFT, Teachers Union, for the 5 years that I was there. My wife is a member of the MNEA, Teachers Union. And it wouldn't seem right to me to ask someone to represent my interests without paying for that. And so paying my membership dues was just, it was the American thing to do because I was receiving value in return for that. Now here we are, we're going to go and allow them to get this service and this collective bargaining without having to pay for that service.
There's case precedent in federal law that the union does not have to represent those folks. And I could flip that argument right back to you in that this bill does not change anyone's ability to be a member of a labor union and collective bargain and do exactly what they're doing today. It does change the fact that you can't be forced to do that as a condition of employment. And you know, and I think that labor unions should not represent someone that's not a member of the union. And, you know, and I think if the labor unions are doing a good job, people that might go to work there will probably see that and join the union.
Did you see the latest poll from our resident intelligentsia, the Missouri Scout? Did you see the poll that they released statewide on this issue?
I don't read the Missouri Scout too often.
Okay, well, it had defeated in that poll, this language, it was defeated in 1978. It's a very, very big change that we're doing, and because of that change, I'm going to end our inquiry now, and I thank you for the inquiry.
Thank you.
Mr. President.
Senator from 7th.
I have an amendment. It has not been distributed, and I will not close until it is so.
Send your amendment forward. And you say it has not been?
It has not been distributed.
All right.
But I ask that it be distributed.
Okay. Do you care to explain the amendment while we're copying it, Senator?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would love to explain the amendment. It's a very, very, very simple amendment. This amendment just attaches a referendum clause to this legislation. 1978, it was overwhelmingly defeated. We believe that the polls indicate today that it would suffer defeat again, and therefore I would place it in front of the citizens of Missouri so that they can decide if the 92% that's non-labor sees the statistics that their average wage will go down if this passes, how they would feel about voting for it. And I think we should give them a chance to vote for it since they're the ones who are impacted and not us. And with that, I take any questions on it.
Senator, you also move for the adoption of the amendment?
I move for the adoption and renew my motion.
All right. Does any other senator desire to be heard? Senator from Phelps, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Inquire of the amendment maker.
Senator from the 7th, do you yield?
Happily.
You may proceed.
Thank you. I would urge the body to vote no on this amendment. I think we recently just had an election on this issue in which our side prevailed, and I don't, and that was no secret on what was, how this was presented in the election process. So I appreciate the inquiry, but I would encourage my members to vote no on this amendment. Thank you.
Does any other senator desire to be heard? Senator from the 13th, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire of the senator from Jackson.
Senator from the 7th, do you yield?
I do.
You may proceed.
What are they distributing, Senator?
They are distributing a referendum clause to place this legislation before the people. I heard the argument from the handler of the bill that the election was overwhelming, but right to work and labor issues was not at the center of why that election went the way it did. We don't need to get into why the election went the way it did, but I believe that there were other reasons, other circumstances behind those results that had nothing to do with labor reform.
I agree with you. I find it strange that 43% of working class people would vote against their own best interests. So they were voting for change. But I don't think that this is the change they were voting for.
Not directly, and I think we should give them that opportunity to do so.
All right. Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Mr.
Thank
President.
You,
does any other senator desire to be heard? Senator from Green, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Just to speak briefly on the proposed amendment.
Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. While I do appreciate the sincerity of the amendment maker, I do have to speak against the amendment for the reasons that the senator from Phelps mentioned. But I want to add on to those reasons. Not only did we just go through an election, it was broadcast all over not only media but also social media, the position of both of the candidates for the highest office in the state. And it was, we all know what that outcome was. But to adopt this amendment would be to add a very significant cost to the election system, $7 to $8 million. I haven't seen a fiscal note. It would seem irresponsible for, to me at least, to write just a month or two after, a couple months after an election, to put that cost on the taxpayer. So I'd speak against the amendment. Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator wish to be heard? Senator from the 24th, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President, to inquire of the senator from the 7th.
Senator from the 7th, do you yield?
I do.
You may proceed.
Senator, I received your amendment, and I'm just looking at the date that you plan on putting this on the ballot. The first Tuesday following the first Monday in November of 2018. So is that correct?
That would be the next general election.
That's right. That's the next general election. So there is already, this is not a new election cycle. This is not a new election. This is just an additional ballot item for the people of the state of Missouri as they go out in the next November election to elect somebody at the federal level for senator and statewide, at least one statewide candidate and candidates in every House district and half of the Senate districts.
I would see no significant increase in cost for the ink that it would take to print the words on the paper that will already be present before the voter.
Right. So I just wanted to make sure that that was clear. This is not really about money. This is about not giving the people an opportunity to weigh in and making a presumption about what this election cycle means. You know, in the state of Missouri, we didn't elect any more or less senators of one party. We stayed the same as last year's count. We elected one more representative from the minority party, and other than and certainly statewide elected officials and at the governor, including the governor's office, changed. But in terms of our legislative body, we have pretty much remained the same. So to call this election a change election specifically dealing with right to work for less may be a characterization that is simply not true.
Well, it's there's so many complicated factors into going how an election turns out. Turnout models, top of the ticket, coattails and drag. To my knowledge, the last time the voters decided this issue, it did not pass. And I believe that because they're the ones who are going to be impacted, and if this is such a good idea on their behalf, then it should pass with no problem. And if it does pass and the people vote in favor of it, then that's the policy that they choose to live under. But I think that this is a big enough issue with large enough ramifications that we should give them that choice.
So you're asking for the people of the state of Missouri to have the freedom to make the decision about this particular policy in the next big election in Missouri in November of 2018.
I would say that there are a handful of issues, this being one of them,
right,
where the impact is so significant and so far-reaching that it raises to the level of requiring their input directly.
Right, and I agree with you, which is why I want to make sure that we're clear that this is not a unique election. This is an election that's going to happen anyway. The date you chose to do so was based on the next big election in the state of Missouri. And so that cost is really not significant. What is significant is that not giving the people the opportunity to vote, as we did back in the 70s, means not giving people the freedom to decide whether this is a challenge to their own pocketbooks, their ability to earn a good wage, a good living, to be well-trained, to have benefits that are meaningful for themselves and their families, and to negotiate with the business owners to continue to work and make changes so that environments are safe.
Look, if you're one of the 92% that is in the labor force and you're not unionized, and you look at the statistics surrounding the impact of this legislation, and you decide that you want to vote in favor of it, and the state of Missouri passes this legislation, then I think that they will fully understand the ramifications of that vote. And if the majority party is comfortable and feels that this truly is the right direction, then why would they stop the people from weighing in on this directly? Like I said, you can't do this with every issue, but with a handful of the most important issues we face, the threshold for putting it in front of the voters, I believe, is met with this policy, and we should allow them to vote.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you for the inquiry, Senator. Thank you, Mr. President.
Any other senator wish to be heard? Any other senator wish to be heard? Senator from the 7th, you are recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I concur and recognize that elections do have consequences. I understand that it didn't turn out the way that our party, the minority party, wanted to in November. But the implications of this legislation, the impact that it will have on those who are not in unions, means that we should give them a say, a chance to weigh in on this. Last time they did, they voted no on it. I believe they will do again. If the majority party feels strongly that this is the right direction for the state, then maybe the state will join them in voting yes on it. If it's not the right direction for the state, then the state will make their voice heard in that as well. And I'd like to have 5 members standing and request a roll call.
You have 5 members standing. A roll call will be requested.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close.
The senator from the 7th renews his motion that Senate Amendment Number 1 be adopted. This will be a roll call vote. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Brown, Chappelle Nadal, Cunningham,
no.
Curls,
no.
Dixon,
no.
Igel,
no.
Emery,
no.
Hageman,
no.
Holzman,
yes.
Hoskins,
no.
Hummel,
yes.
Kehoe.
No.
Koenig.
No.
Kraus.
No.
Leibola.
No.
Munzlinger.
No.
Nasheed.
No.
Onder.
No.
Richard.
No.
Riddle.
No.
Rizzo.
Aye.
Romine.
Aye.
Rowden.
No.
Sater.
No.
Schoff.
No.
Schatz.
No.
Shoup.
Yes.
Sifton.
Aye.
Sylvie.
Aye.
Wallingford.
No.
Walsh.
Aye.
Wasson.
No.
Whelan.
Aye.
Center from the fifth. Your vote will be changed to a yes vote. Senator from the 14th, purpose you're right. Senator from 14th votes aye. By your vote of 12 ayes and 21 noes, the amendment has been defeated. We are now back on Senate substitute for Senate Bill 19. Any senator wish to be heard? Senator from 13th, with first you rise.
To inquire the senator from Phelps.
Senator from Phelps, do you yield?
I do.
You may proceed.
Evening, Senator.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm all right, but I have all these notes because I actually listened to the debate between you and the senator from the 7th. So, and he didn't ask any of the questions that I wanted answers after he went down a path with you. You know, but what are you going to do? So, I missed the part you guys were talking about the auto industry. And that you said Missouri lost out on car plants because they weren't a right-to-work state?
Yes.
Because I know in Kentucky, where there is a right to, where there is a car plant, it was already there before the state went right-to-work, as well as Tennessee. Now, in Tennessee, I think it was in Tennessee, the people there voted, and they beat the UAW by a few votes, I don't know. But Kentucky was not a right-to-work state
when the
auto industry went into, when I think it was Toyota or GM or whoever it was, when they went into Kentucky. They weren't a right-to-work state at the time.
Right.
And the other thing I wanted to know was about the Supreme Court ruling about the free riders. Could you or somebody from your staff get that information to my staff? Because I can't find the ruling. There was a Supreme Court ruling that that folks don't have to.
Yes, we will get that information to you.
Yeah, I'd like to see it.
It may be tomorrow morning.
That's fine, because I hope that I have it before we end the debate on this subject matter. But I know there's a lot of folks that want to talk about this, and that's one of the things I'd like to know about. And you were just talking about a friend of yours who had a son. I was curious as to what kind of work he did. That you said he went to work in Kansas and got paid more, because I kind of went through all of the different construction industry anyway. I can't tell you about the auto industry or manufacturing job or anything like that, but I went through the wages of the...
And I don't know the whole backstory on this thing. Maybe he had a skill set that... was really needed, but he was quite happy with his change at the time.
Well, good for him. I hope he works a long time in Kansas.
Yeah.
And I know you said that years ago that we needed the unions because they brought in safety rules and all these things that made life better for the workers. And I didn't know, are we finished with that? Do we not want to make changes? Do we not want to improve the environment? I mean, we're going to be manufacturing in this country like crazy in the next 4 years. At least that's what the president said. He says manufacturing's coming back and we're going to make America great again. And I just hope that we don't move so fast that we're going to need the labor unions again to bail us out and make us pay attention to safety issues.
Well, President Trump met with labor leaders this morning.
He did, and I didn't get a chance to see the outcome of that meeting.
Yeah, I think it was an amiable meeting, and I think labor leaders are wanting more jobs available. And I can give you the case was retail clerks versus Lion Dry Goods in 1962, and it was Justice Brennan that said that free riders do not have to be represented in union cases.
In 1962?
Yes.
Okay.
So it's been around a while.
Yeah, it has. And I just wanted to look the case up because I could not find it. And maybe that's why.
One of my colleagues had that available. It's in my notes, but I'd have to thumb a while. So I appreciate him bringing that forward.
I appreciate it as well. You said that the only change in the sub is the grandfather clause.
Yes, ma'am.
Why do they call it that? Why can't they call it a grandmother clause? I mean, we do all the work.
Yeah.
I can attest to that because I've been grandmothering all weekend.
Well, I've certainly fit the grandfather clause, I guess. It's just assured that contracts will stay in effect until they're mature.
Until they're right. Okay, so the penalty clauses are still in there?
Yes, ma'am.
The civil penalty clauses? I understand having the other penalties in there, but I'm worried about the civil as when I came in your office the other day.
Yes, you brought that forward to me, and I've been assured that it is illegal. And a lot of the other right-to-work laws have got...
Oh, I'm not saying it's illegal at all, Senator. What I'm saying is we're setting up some good contractors for lawsuits. I can just see a scenario where I'm running a job and I lay somebody off because they're not working. I don't work for a labor union, so they're not going to sue me. They're going to sue the contractor I work for. I belong to the labor union. I don't work for the labor union, so that guy's going to go home and say, oh, yeah, I got fired today, honey, and they fired me because I'm a member of a labor union. So he's going to go find, you know, St. Louis, the hellhole of court cases, and file a court case against my good contractor who I've worked for 25 years. And, you know, he just wants 8 hours pay for 8 hours work, and he's willing to pay a very good wage and health benefits and everything else. But now he's subject, because of what we do up here, to a lawsuit from some slug that doesn't want to work.
Right.
And trust me, we've all got them, whether we think we do or not. There's always people in this world that don't want to work, and that's what I'm worried about, Senator. That is the one thing in this bill, well, among other things, but that really concerns me. Because as the senator from the 7th said, this is a foregone conclusion. I can do simple math. I understand that. But I want to make sure that we're not hurting good contractors that just want to get the job done, that builds our hospitals and builds our schools. And that language really concerns me.
And you know, I really haven't had a lot of employers or contractors that have had concerns in committee. There were a few, but it didn't seem like it was overwhelming concern. So I don't think this does a lot of damage as long as they're following the law.
Well, that's the funny thing about lawyering, Senator,
I understand.
Because you told me that your lawyers told you it was fine. And I talked to not necessarily my lawyers, because I don't have any lawyers, but I did run it through a few lawyers, and they said that they could possibly see where there was a problem there. So I thank you for the inquiry. I see one of my lawyers is on the floor now. I'd like to inquire. Mr. President, may I inquire of the senator from the first?
Senator from the first, do you yield?
I do.
You may proceed.
Hi, Senator. You like your new seat?
Senator, I appreciate the introduction you just gave me. In years past, it's possible that you could have been referring to several other folks here, but I think you know it. Myself and the senator from the second are the only two with JDs, and I'm the one that practices.
Senators one and two, Senator.
There you go. Some would say all progress from there. No. Especially this year now that I am the only currently practicing attorney in the body, am going to try to take that very seriously, and not too seriously, but do want to try to lend what insight I can where it can be helpful.
A couple of grins around this room, Senator.
There you go.
Maybe some people going to law school. You know, and
well, you got to be careful doing that while you're serving, Senator.
It might start to think that doctoring's not so good, and he might join his brother's law firm. You never know.
There you go. Well, you know what? That law firm, of course, is in Webster Groves, which is in the 1st Senate District. I would love to have the senator from the 2nd, who grew up in my district, by the way, in Afton, back in the 63119.
I know exactly where he grew up. He went to school with some family members of mine.
Did he really?
Yes, he did.
Did not know that. It's a small,
yes,
big state, Senator.
Yes, it is. It's a small, big state. So, Senator, you heard the conversation I had with the senator from Phelps. Have you had a chance to review line 20, page 2 of the sub?
I have.
What is your opinion? I mean, we talk about, we don't want to let anybody get lined up to get knocked down by a frivolous lawsuit. And you can look at me now, Senator, because there's these new rules.
Is there really?
Yeah,
well,
there is.
We've
just
got
to keep your shoulder pointed at the president up there, and we're good.
Well, I think my shoulders are relatively parallel to the president's shoulders right
there
now,
you go.
I think I'm safe. I can now crane my neck.
Pretty cool, isn't it?
Well, it helps that I have this new desk, Senator. So there's a prominent conservative talk show host who is fond from time to time of saying, when he gets to a particular thought that he thinks is important for people to take note of for future reference, he will say, flag the tape. So what I'm going to do right now, Senator, is say, flag the tape. For those who are supporters of this bill, as currently written, including specifically the section that you're talking about, page 2, line 20 through 25, a yes vote for this bill with this language in it is saying that, yes, here we think it is a good idea for an aggrieved party to be able to recover their attorney's fees as a matter of statute for this particular cause of action. And I say flag the tape here, Senator, because I have a sneaky hunch that from time to time we may find ourselves taking precisely the opposite position in a different context and saying that, no, in this instance, we don't want an injured party to be able to recover their attorney's fees for bringing the action, but in this context, we do. And it has been said that philosophical consistency is the hobgoblin of small minds, but I will probably find myself asking from time to time, Senator, which is it? Is giving an aggrieved party the ability to recover their attorney's fees a good idea or a bad idea? And I'm concerned that the answer may depend on whether we like or dislike who the particular legislation is targeting. And all I would say is that really the best way to approach it?
Well, do you think it is?
In this context, let me put on the other hat for just a moment, Senator.
Okay.
The critique that will frequently be made of putting in not even prevailing parties' fee recovery, just plaintiff prevailing party fee recovery, is that if a person believes that they have been injured, or at the very least is inclined to file a lawsuit, and they know that if they win, And mind you, we're not talking about violations. We're talking about violations or threatened violations that they don't have to worry about paying their lawyers. I think most people on the average, if they're in doubt, might be more likely to sue than less likely to sue. If they know that if it works out in the end for them that their attorney's fees are going to be paid, they're going to be more likely to sue. And it's precisely that truism that in many other contexts, I believe, we're going to see members of this body saying, well, we don't want fee recovery for this or for that or for the other. But boy, when it comes to making sure that folks don't have to join a union if they don't want to, that is something that we're going to give fee recovery for above all other contexts. There are going to be people that are injured. There are going to be people that are fired wrongfully. There are going to be people that are harmed in all sorts of ways. And I'm just concerned that I think we're going to see this body say, yeah, but you can't recover your attorney's fees in those instances. But boy, here, we sure think it's a great idea.
So you don't think it'll be enforced?
Oh, I think it...
are enforced that we'll cookie cut it and we'll enforce it how we like in different areas.
Well, I mean, what we're saying is, in this language as currently written, any person injured as a result of any violation or threatened violation of this section may recover any all damages of any character. And when we say damages of any character, you're talking about compensatory damages, actual damages. I don't see statutory special damages, punitive damages, you name it. Any kind of damage under the sun, attorney's fee recovery included. Can you imagine, Senator, for just a minute, some of the civil justice bills that we're going to have coming up this year? Can you imagine? We heard a Missouri Merchandising Practices Act bill in a committee that I'm on last week, and that bill is motivated by, I think, some very well-placed concern about what's happening with MMPA claims in our state, but as worded, I have concerns with it. Can you imagine that bill saying, in an MMPA case, you can get damages of any character resulting from a violation, any character? The damages language in that bill is very different, very restrictive. I mean, in fact, I would, for the sake of debate and maybe to make the point, although I don't know that it's the best use of the body's time, I mean, we could draft an amendment that mimics the MMPA damages language from that bill, try to put it into this bill, watch it get rejected then, but that other language kept in a separate
right,
case.
It
just, you know, it's not about the approach, it's about who's writing the check. If who's writing the check is a labor union, well, then by all means, damages of any character and recover your attorney's fees. If who's writing the check is a business that has deceived Missouri consumers, oh, no, we're not going to have damages of any character. We're not going to have fee recovery necessarily. We'll wait until we see. We'll take that bill as it comes. We may win some of these battles. We may lose some of these battles this year, Senator. I'm just going to make sure that everybody that's listening understands where we are being consistent and where we are saying one thing one week for one person and the absolute opposite or something different the next week because of a different audience.
Senator, I'm really sorry. I didn't mean to raise your blood pressure.
It's all right.
And I certainly hope that you did not take offense to my comment about St. Louis being the hellhole of litigation, because I sure thought that was across the Mississippi River. I thought Madison County was always referred to that.
Well, some would suggest that the hellhole is in whatever state just had a change in climate that might allow for some things to change pretty quickly. I don't know, Senator. I'll say this, if the concern is that we have a judicial hellhole in the city of St. Louis because of our venue statute, was written in 2005. And 2005 was the first year that you had the House, the Senate, and the governor's office all in the hands of one particular political party. I'm not going to be partisan about it, but yeah, 2005 was the first year those particular stars aligned. So if you got a problem with our venue statute, you might want to take it up with our erstwhile lieutenant governor, who was, I believe, the president of the Senate at that, the president pro tem of the Senate at that time, or with one of my law partners, who was the Speaker of the House at that time. The venue statute that we've got for the city of St. Louis wasn't crafted by people who line up on the side of the ball that you and I line up on, Senator. Wasn't crafted by members, predecessors in our caucus.
I see. Well, thank you, Senator.
You bet.
Mr. President.
Senator from the 13th.
Mr. President, I have an amendment.
Please.
It has not been read, and it has not been distributed.
Right.
I ask for a waiver of the reading.
Okay. Senator, please send your amendment forward. You are asking for a waiver of the reading?
Yeah.
You will not be recognized to close until it's distributed.
Thank you.
Do you care to explain the amendment?
Pretty sharp. Mr. President, it just said by striking said lines, and all it does is take out the civil penalties in this bill for the hardworking contractors of the state of Missouri that I've worked for 40 years. I don't know about in some parts of the state, but when I brought this to the attention of some people, they told me that they ran it by the one guy that wants this bill the most, and he was perfectly happy with the language, and I'm certain that he was. But I've also talked to a lot of attorneys and brought it to the attention of a lot of contractors, mechanical contractors, insulation contractors, electrical contractors in the last week or so, and they had no idea. They were concentrated on other bills. They had no idea that this language would do that to them. And in fairness to them, Mr. President, there's people in this body that don't know what their legislation does, and I'm one of them until I read it before I get it to this floor. So I don't expect that the citizen at large to be able to know every little nuance that are in the bills that we submit here on this floor. And that's my explanation, Senator. Mr. President.
Senator from the 13th. I did catch that.
If there are no inquiries, I close.
Senator, I don't believe your amendment has been distributed.
Oh, it hasn't.
Yet, so you won't be allowed to close until it has been
distributed. More than happy to take any inquiries.
Senator from the 4th, what purpose do you rise?
The 13th.
Senator from the 13th, you yield.
I do.
Senator, now we may test this. Thank you, Mr. President. Now we may test this new rule.
Don't test it too far, Senator.
I'm trying not to.
All I can tell you, that guy up there is pretty quick with that gavel.
I'm trying not to. Can you explain your amendment to me one more time,
please? All this amendment is going to do, I believe, is take out the civil penalties that begin on page 2, line 20.
Yeah.
It would, you know, that would allow somebody that felt they were wrongfully fired.
And I have some questions for that, and I'm not an attorney, and I was going to inquire the senator from the 1st, but he's not in here right now, and maybe you can go over some of those questions that I have for me. Nothing like starting the first bill with something like this. But, Senator, my questions stem from maybe some personal experiences, and I don't know how they relate because I'm not a lawyer. But as a construction worker, and you and I both know that we've been on the job, there's a, you know, I see some scenarios in the near future to where we could have some serious problems. And, you know, you've been an apprentice on the job site. Pretty rough go, wouldn't you say?
When I was an apprentice?
When you were an apprentice, doesn't even compare to me, but I would say that it was a pretty rough experience. You kind of got to leave your feelings at the door, wouldn't you say so?
Yeah, well, if you don't know about that before you go, yeah, you do.
Right.
And I didn't know about that, but I, looking back, I think I was pretty fortunate because at the time I was a novelty, Senator.
That's right.
I was a woman pretty much on what was considered a man's world. They didn't know what to do with me. They were of the opinion that I wasn't going to stick around long. Well, guess what?
How'd that work out for them?
It worked out well for me.
That's right.
You know, I'm the proud recipient of a pension that I paid into for over 35 plus years, so I'm pretty proud of that.
Sure.
Raised my kids on that. It was good for me. It worked out good for me, and I think it worked out good for my craft. I love the guys I worked with, and I respected them, and I think that feeling was mutual. I I was never for lack of a job. I always worked. Even when times were a little bad, I always had employment. Now, a couple times I had to travel, but I don't mind about that. Right. Because our territory was large, and you have to cover the territory.
Sure.
You should know that. You have a very large...
Man your jurisdiction.
Yeah, you have a huge jurisdiction. You guys have more guys to go around than we had, and gals.
That's true. That's true, Senator. Yeah, we go all the way down to the Boot Hill and stop short of Hannibal, but it's my local has a pretty large jurisdiction. That's true. And
yeah, we have 90 counties in our jurisdiction. Union. We take in two states. So we have a huge jurisdiction and a small amount of people to cover it, but we seem to manage.
Yeah, your organization does very well. But, you know, back to my point, I think that, you know, if we're going to start fining these business owners for any violation, I guess my question is going to be, you know, there's a lot of hazing that goes on, as you know, in the press. Let's go through a scenario where there's seven people on the job. You know, I've gotten into arguments with people before. Let's say you have someone that's not paying union dues. Inevitably, someone's going to say something to that person. They're going to be angry that they're covering their share of the burden, and they're going to be angry about it, and they probably say something. In that scenario, the job gets close to being done. They lay off three people. One of them is that person. Now,
which person? The person that said something to the guy that's not paying dues?
Let's say the guy that's not paying dues.
Okay.
All right. In that scenario, then can he go back and sue and say, well, I was clearly someone threatened me, threatened a violation. And again, like I said, I'm not an attorney, so I don't know the issue. Is that owner then liable because
someone
said something?
That's how I understand it. If I read it, any person injured as a result of any violation or threatened violation of this section may recover any and all damages of any character resulting from such violation or threatened violation, including costs and reasonable attorney fees. Such remedies shall be independent of and in addition to the other penalties and remedies prescribed under this section. And then it goes on to say that the prosecuting attorney of each county, boy, we're going to burden those guys, and the attorney general of the state shall investigate complaints of violations, which there will probably be a lot of them.
And I guess that's my point is, we're gonna if one person mouths off on a job to someone and they get laid off at some point, as you know, it, you know, the way our business is, it's cyclical, and especially in the winter and summer months, and eventually you will probably get laid off and go to another shop at some point. And you know, what's the remedy here? It seems like you're gonna have any number of people on a job site. If someone says the one wrong thing and eventually that person gets laid off, you're having these other people on the job that are putting that business owner at risk to be sued.
Right, and you and I can both agree that it would be cumulative. It wouldn't be one wrong thing.
That's
but
right.
We also know we've been on these job sites that it's like a dog with a bone. Once somebody finds something and they start in on this, they're not going to let go.
That's right.
You know, they're not, you know, this. If this, when this becomes law, you have to live by the law. And I don't like putting anybody in harm's way. But there will be rules and there will be consequences when we break the rules that we pass in this chamber.
And I guess I'm thinking more, you know, I can see when work's good, maybe this wouldn't be an issue. Someone leaves, goes to another job, another contractor easily. But, you know, people seem maybe more apt to sue if there's not any work down at the hall. There's
yeah.
nowhere to go. And then their recourse is to sit for a year. If there's no work, as you know as well as I do, the last several years have been very, very slow, with the exception of last year, very, very slow for construction work. You know, we're going to get in a scenario where people are going to be faced with the choice of being laid off for a long time or suing their employer on the grounds of, you know, just needing to make some money.
Well, and Senator, I'm not grasping at straws. I certainly hope that doesn't happen. I certainly do.
Well, there's a lot of things that we hope don't happen, but when you put something in here as broadly as this seems to be, it seems like that's something that that could happen.
Right. Right. I appreciate the sponsor of the bill putting the grandmother clause in, but I still think that the penalty, at least the civil penalties, should come out. And I don't understand why we don't want to protect good contractors. I understand that you have to have penalties when people break the law, but that's what the other penalties in here are for. You know, I don't think that a contractor is going to intentionally violate this law. He's not going to jeopardize his company. Mr. President, could we get a little quiet over there on the right?
Please keep the noise down in the chamber for the senators to have their debate.
Thank you, Mr. President. So, Senator, certainly you can understand where I'm coming from with this amendment.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
I've seen it. I've seen it on. I've seen what you're talking about before.
And so, I guess, I mean, I wish I had a little clearer understanding. And I'm, again, forgive me for not being an attorney. Apparently, we only have one in the body. I wasn't aware of that. But
no, we have two.
Oh, two.
We do. The senator from the second.
I misunderstood.
Is a doctor as
pardon
well
me.
As an
I misunderstood
attorney.
What the senator from the first was saying.
I think what the senator from the first was telling me was he was the only practicing attorney.
I see.
You know, I always found that phrase interesting.
Practicing?
Practicing. I don't get to practice at work. You know, I have to get it right the first time. You might inquire of him, though, if you have any questions. There's two attorneys here, and I see that the senator from the first is still in the chamber, as well as the senator from the second. I don't know. As far as the amendment, I think it's a good amendment. I understand what's going to happen to it. But, I just want to take care of the people I represent, Senator.
I understand. Sorry.
Or the people that I work for.
Sure.
As do some of the other people in here with legislation like this.
And I just, as I said, I just see this being an issue moving forward. So, but I appreciate the inquiry, and since I see the other senator. Mr. President.
Senator from the fourth, what purpose do you rise?
Inquire the senator from the first.
Senator from the first, do you yield?
I do.
You may proceed.
Thank you. Senator, I think you were out, and give me some legal opinion here to help me out. The scenario that I walked through with the senator from the 13th was, let's say that there's a group of five people on a construction site. One of them is not paying union dues after this legislation passes. And one of the other employees on the job, which inevitably will happen, says something to them. They get in an argument about this. And then later off, layoffs come, and the gentleman that's not paying dues or the woman that's not paying dues gets laid off along with someone else.
Right.
Is that employer then liable because another one of his employees went after them, so to speak?
So, to be clear, we're talking about
strictly talking about the penalty.
And we're strictly, okay, and we're in lines 20 to 25 of page 2, right?
Correct.
All right. So I'm going to back it up to 5, which is lines 16 through 19. Any person injured result violation. It's to any and all violators or persons threatening violations. And so the question, the threshold question is, a violator or person threatening a violation is not a defined term, which is to say it's arguably somewhat ambiguous as to whether we're talking about the employer or the union here. And it's entirely possible we're talking about both. The underlying prohibition, and employers obviously define, labor organization is defined. So we define those two terms. But I note that when we talk about violators in Section 5 on page 2, we don't say labor organization, we don't say employer, we say in essence anybody, either or, is how I would read it. So I think if an employer makes a threat or takes an action, or if a labor organization makes a threat or takes an action. And arguably, the way this is set out, anybody else would be susceptible of the actions that are set forth in subsection 5 on page 2 as I read it.
Sure. Okay. That's what I, Senator, thank you for the clarification.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator wish to be heard on amendment number 2? Senator from Phelps, what purpose do you rise?
Yeah, Mr. President, I'd like to inquire the senator of the 20th district, please.
Senator, did you say the 20th district?
Yes. Right. Or second?
Senator from the second.
Second, sorry.
Senator from the second, do you yield?
I do.
You may proceed.
Thank you, Senator, for yielding. And I know you've had time to kind of look at the amendment, and basically what it does is remove line 20 through line 25.
Right.
Give me your legal opinion of the effect this would have on the bill.
Well, I'm not sure my legal opinion is worth much, but I'll give you my opinion as a senator.
Your opinion would be fine.
Yeah. Right? I think that it is important when we have laws that we want people to obey. We'd like to think that men would be as angels and they would just obey the law. But in most cases, we find it prudent to put in various penalty clauses. And we can put in civil penalty clauses or criminal penalty clauses. You know, and this is a civil cause. Any person injured as a result of the violation or threat in violation. And I think threat in violation is important, too, because that's the whole point of injunctions or temporary restraining orders, is to stop bad conduct before it happens. Can recover damages and reasonable attorney's fees. I think that's the kind of clause that the legislature puts into a law if it means it. And as I said to a witness during committee who was objecting to the idea of these various penalties, look, this is about the right of workers.
Right.
A right of workers not to be fired for refusing to join or pay agency fees to a union. And this legislature means what it says when we pass this workers' right legislation that you are carrying. And yeah, if an employer colludes illegally with a labor organization to violate the rights of workers, you betcha there should be some penalties in the bill. Now, we can squabble about exactly what the penalties should be, but these seem entirely reasonable.
Well, I appreciate that opinion, because that was kind of what I thought we had arrived at during the committee hearing on this portion of the bill, that it does, we mean what we say. And the former language of the bill, and the bill is about freedom to work. So to me, removing that would certainly weaken the ability to enforce legislation that we feel pretty strongly about.
Yeah, and in all honesty, in some ways, it might, harshen the legislation a little bit, because we would still have the very low-level criminal penalty of a Class C misdemeanor. So if we don't have, if we can't do it by seeking civil damages, our only recourse becomes pushing the prosecutor to bring criminal charges. But as you pointed out earlier, these penalty provisions are very similar to other provisions and other right-to-work laws in other states.
Right, right.
And, I think it was an interesting line of questioning during our committee hearing where one of the members pressed one of the witnesses, do you know of any cases where employers have been punished in right-to-work states, Indiana, Michigan, and so on, and Oklahoma. And the witness was unable to come up with a single example. That doesn't mean there haven't been any, but it's certainly not very common. And if there were egregious examples, I think we would have heard of them by now.
Yes, and in our research and our discussions, This language is not unusual to this right-to-work bill.
No, right. I mean, it's, in all honesty, it's not unusual in any bill to have a civil penalty, a penalty or a provision allowing for equitable relief as sub four does, and a minor criminal law penalty, a Class C misdemeanor, as in sub four. So, no, this is not an unusual statute by any means, and certainly not an unusual right to work statute.
Yes. Well, that was kind of how I'd presented the bill. I was hopeful I had been truthful in my presentation, and the fact that we're not asking for something really unusual here. And along those lines, I'm going to ask members to vote no on the amendment, because I think it does weaken the law and what we're trying to do with this piece of legislation. And I wanted your personal opinion and legal opinion as much as you could present it, because I know that's not what you do every day. And I appreciate that. This didn't come about overnight. This has been something that we have worked on for a long time, and we have tried in every way possible to make it legal and applicable to the goals that we're trying to bring forward and hopefully generate jobs and economic development and bring manufacturing jobs back to Missouri. Our small communities throughout Missouri used to be very strong in manufacturing, and a lot of that went overseas. And so when we are making we're really trying hard to bring back the shoe factories, bring back differing manufacturing companies, which I think our president has indicated that he is really pushing hard for. We got to be ready, and we got to be able to make this this law stand. And I think what we're doing is kind of what we've seen done over the last 8 to 10 right-to-work state laws.
Right, right. That's right. You know, in 2015, as the Senate took up right-to-work, Volvo announced that they were opening a brand new manufacturing plant in South Carolina. A total investment of $1 billion. When the plant is fully up and operational, 4,000 good-paying jobs, good benefits. And South Carolina is a right-to-work state. It doesn't look like we're ever going to get such a project in Missouri as long as we remain a forced unionization state. So I think right-to-work is the right thing to do morally. I think it is the right thing to do for economic growth and job growth, wage growth. If you look at wage growth, a lot of times there's talk about overall wage level being lower in right-to-work states, which superficially is true, but only if you ignore the difference in the cost of living in California, Massachusetts, New York.
And I think that was brought out in the discussion of the bill in committee, that overall it tends to be more money in the worker's pocket, even though statistically wages may be somewhat lower. It appears that living conditions are a bit cheaper. So,
if you look at the trajectory of wage growth, trajectory of total jobs, that has been better in right-to-work states. And if you look at the difference in Midwestern states, right-to-work versus non-right-to-work over the last decade and a half, it's dramatic. Real wage growth, 3% in non-right-to-work states and 15% in right-to-work states.
You know, and it was a point was made that, you know, some of these companies I had mentioned were foreign companies. Well, if they're building that vehicle here and they're selling it here anyway and we can get the jobs, I guess I don't have as big a problem with that as some of our maybe the big three, sending the labor outside the United States.
You know, I have no problem with a Japanese or Korean car company coming here and putting their assembly plant in Missouri. Not a problem at all.
Right. And, you know, like I said, in Tennessee, that huge Nissan plant is there. And when you drive through Tennessee, almost every car they're driving is a Nissan now.
Right.
Whether it's
right.
a pickup or a car.
Right.
And because they're trying to support their jobs, I think. And I think the quality control in those plants are pretty much second to none.
Right. And I think the workers' safety standards in those plants are second to none as well.
Right.
They're brand new plants built up this modern standards, OSHA standards. I think that's true.
Right. Well, I do appreciate your time, your opinion. You know, when we hear the discussions on the floor, at times it's like, okay, they're making a pretty good point. Did I overlook something? And I didn't think that was the case. And you've reassured me, so that's helpful. And well,
Senator, I really know I know I've enjoyed the inquiry, but and I really have to commend my our colleagues on the other side of the aisle for their passion, their courage, their desire to do what they believe is right. We just have a difference of opinion. As a good friend of mine once said, I reserve the right to differ with my friends. And
absolutely.
Yeah, I appreciate your
and
work.
And I tried to be respectful of their opinion in presenting the bill because, you know, at the end of the day, I'm sure they're not always wrong and we're not always right.
Oh, so. I think they've caught some things in my bills that I'm glad they caught. So I appreciate it. I appreciate it, Senator.
Our exalted floor leader says, speak for yourself. He's always right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you very
much. Don't listen to him, though, Senator. You're welcome. Thank
you. I appreciate it. Thank you. Mr. President.
Senator from Phelps, what purpose do you rise?
Briefly speak on the amendment. Hopefully some folks were listening, and I think it's very important that the members vote no on the amendment. That would really gut what we're trying to do here if this amendment went on. So I do respectfully ask for a strong no vote on this amendment.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Thanks. And does any other senator wish to be heard? Senator from the 24th.
Thank you, Mr. President. To inquire of the senator from the 13th.
Senator from 13th. Senator from the 13th. Senator from the 13th, do you yield?
I do, Mr. President.
You may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Senator, for taking my inquiry. We've heard a lot of discussion about your amendment, and I just wanted to ask you a few additional questions, if I could.
Sure.
Can we talk about the states, the right-to-work states that have civil penalties and those that have criminal penalties? Do you have that information?
I do because I have part of it. I was in the committee when the question was asked, so I had some folks research it for me. And I do not have the current status of the state of Kentucky.
Okay.
Because it's too new. I guess, that it wasn't on the websites I went to. In fact, I couldn't find it on any website. I'm sure it's out there, maybe on Kentucky's website. But so I only have it for 26 states.
Okay.
So in Alabama, it says, any person who may be denied employment or be deprived of continuation of his employment in violations of sections so-and-so, or of one or more of such sections shall be entitled to recover from such employer and from any other person, firm, corporation, and association acting in concert with him by appropriate actions in courts of this state, such damages as he may have sustained by reason of such denial. So it sounds to me like in Alabama that you could sue the contractor, and if you could prove that the union was in cahoots with the contractor, you could probably sue them both there.
And that would be a civil?
Yeah.
Okay, okay.
Okay, and
so
then
Alabama,
Arizona.
All right.
Civil liability of a person. Arkansas has no civil liability. Colorado has misdemeanor, no civil liability. Georgia has guilty of a misdemeanor and upon conviction thereof shall be punished as provided in code section, and it lists the number, no civil penalties. Hawaii, no civil penalties. Idaho, they're in alphabetical order, Senator.
Yes, I'm getting that as I write this.
They have misdemeanor, but no civil penalties.
Would the members in the chamber please keep the noise down while the senators are in debate? Will you please keep the noise down? Senator, you can proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Where was I? Was it in Idaho, or had I left for Indiana?
My shoulder is pointing forward, don't you think?
Yeah, you're pointing at him, and it's not polite to point, Senator.
Just with a shoulder. Okay.
So where was I in Hawaii or Idaho?
You just said Idaho. No.
Idaho.
No civil
penalties. Indiana is no civil penalties. Iowa. Iowa, any person, firm, association, labor organization, or corporation, or director, officer, representative, agent, or member thereof, who shall violate any of the provisions of this chapter, or who shall aid and abet in such violations, shall be guilty of a serious misdemeanor. Now, that's where we need the senator from the first or the second, because I don't know the difference between a serious misdemeanor or a misdemeanor, and it might be in that state here. We classify our misdemeanors by letters, and maybe they do it different there in Iowa.
Okay.
We're in Iowa.
We'll find out. I'll make a mark on that.
All right. And then from Kansas, the law in Kansas, violations of right to work amendment, civil action for damages, attorney's fees as costs, exception limitation actions.
I'm sorry, say that last part again.
It says exception, limitation of actions. So they can sue civilly, it sounds like, in Kansas, but there is a limit on it.
Okay.
I guess it's what limitation
unlike
of actions
what? Those
mean.
Lines 20 to 25.
It says any person who is aggrieved by any violation of the provisions of Section 12 of Article 15 of the Constitution of the State of Kansas shall have a cause of action against the person committing such violation for the actual damages sustained by the aggrieved person. In any such action, if the prevailing party recovers damages, the court shall award reasonable attorney fees to the prevailing party to be taxed as part of the cost of such action, except that when a tender has been made by the adverse party prior to the trial of such action on its merits, and the amount recovered is not in excess of such tender. No such cost shall be allowed. Any action authorized by this section shall be commenced within 1 year after the cause of action shall have occurred. Louisiana.
So limitations in Kansas, and
right.
Part of it was limitation to actual damages.
Yes.
Okay. Louisiana.
Louisiana. We're traveling all over the country, Senator.
Yes, we are. Alphabetically.
Misdemeanor.
Okay.
So, Massachusetts. I have nothing highlighted there, so I would say that... No contract written. Let's see. I'm reading it. I think that they have no misdemeanor. Oh, yeah, they aren't right to work. Why are they on the list then? They have relief afforded by contract relative to membership in a labor organization. So I fact-checked it, Senator. We have a side conversation going on here.
All right, so what did you say about Massachusetts? They are not a right-to-work state? Is that what I mean?
They are not, but they have penalties if you, you know. I'll have to look at the map I have.
Okay.
You know, just because it's riffed with people that have, well, never mind, Senator. We have left Massachusetts and we're off to Michigan.
which is a relatively, I believe it's relatively new law, probably under 5 or 6 years old. And it says, person who violates this section is liable for a civil fine. So they do have civil fine of not more than $500. So theirs is limited.
Limited, right.
Yeah. And it also has, I am Michigan under the section shall be submitted to the state treasurer. Yeah, civil fine. They have no misdemeanor. Mississippi. We're going down south.
Okay.
I'm trying to look at my map, too. Okay, there it is. New Hampshire, Maine, Connecticut. Those are all right-to-work states. Are they on the bubble? They have right-to-work laws pending. Mississippi, any corporation or person or manager of any company or partnership who violates any of the provisions of this chapter for which penalty is not otherwise provided shall be guilty of a misdemeanor.
Okay, conviction. Misdemeanor in Mississippi?
So that's a misdemeanor also.
Okay.
From Mississippi, it goes to Nebraska. And that is strictly a class 4 misdemeanor, and that has been on the books since September 7th, 1947.
Oh.
Yeah, that's an old one. Nevada. Any person who violates any provisions inclusive or who enters into any agreement containing a provision declared illegal by NRS, which is an abbreviation for Nevada Revised Statute, inclusive or who shall bring about containing a provision declared inclusive or who shall bring about the discharge or the denial of employment of any person because of a non-membership in a labor organization shall be liable to the person injured as a result of such act.
Okay.
So that sounds to me, and I don't know if the attorneys are listening, if that's that sounds to me like civil penalties.
I think it does too.
North Carolina. They have certain agreements that they declared illegal. They do not have not showing that they have civil actions. Ohio, every undertaking or promise, whether written or oral, express or implied, this one sounds pretty tough so far, constituting or contained in any contract or agreement of hiring or employment between any individual firm, association, or corporation, and any employee or prospective employee of the same whereby either party of such contract or agreement undertakes or promises not to join, become, or remain a member of any labor organization. So you can or you can't belong. Promises that he will withdraw from the employment relation. It doesn't have any penalties there at all.
No, it just says there are going to be no unions there, right? Because you're not allowed to join.
Okay. South Carolina, they have a misdemeanor. From there, you go to South Dakota, and that's a Class 2 misdemeanor. So out of, and then from there, it went down to Utah. Violation of act is a misdemeanor. Virginia shall be a misdemeanor. Wisconsin, a Class A misdemeanor. Wyoming, they don't have anything highlighted for me. It says any person who directly or indirectly places upon any other person any requirement or compulsion prohibited by this act or who makes any agreement written or oral, express or implied to do so or who engages in any lockout, layoff, strike, work stoppage, slowdown, picketing, boycott, or other actions or conduct, a purpose or effect of which is impose upon any person directly or indirectly any requirement is guilty of a misdemeanor. It took a long time to get there. It wasn't highlighted in my paper, which brings another question to me. I know, you know, and I don't know.
Three senators standing. Senator from Phelps, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, would you please lay Senate Bill 19 on the informal calendar with the amendment pending?
Senate Bill, the substitute for Senate Bill 19 will be put on the informal calendar with amendment number 2 from the Senator 13th. Senator from Cole, purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go back to the order of business of resolutions.
Hearing no objections, the Senate will go to the order of business of resolutions. Senate
Thank you, Mr. Call. President. I would move that Senate Resolution number 85 be taken up before the body.
Senator from Cole moves that Senate Resolution number 85 be taken up for adoption. And the resolution is now before the body. Oh, I'm sorry. All those in favor, I'm sorry. Senator moves that Senate Resolution number 85 be taken up for adoption. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. For the benefit of the body, Senate Resolution 85 was distributed and printed in the Journal last Thursday. It is the annual employee resolution for Senate employees. Just a fun fact on my notes here, Mr. President, in calendar year 16, there were 86.75 FTEs. Now, I don't know who the 0.75 person is, but I don't know if his last name is Baker or something like that, but there is a three-quarter person somewhere. This simply adopts the OA guidelines to fit various folks who work hard for us here in the Senate into various job classifications, and it's a resolution we need to pass as part of our kind of housekeeping to keep things moving around here.
All right, and Senator, you are requesting for the adoption of the resolution?
I'm requesting for the adoption of the resolution. Thank you.
Okay. You've heard the motion by the Senator from Cole. Does any Senator desire to be heard? Senator from Cole, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close.
The Senator from Cole closes on his motion. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Brown, Chappelle Nadal, Cunningham, Curls, Dixon, Igel, Emery, Hageman, Holzman, Hoskins, Hummel, Kehoe, Koenig, Kraus, Leibler, Munslinger, Nasheed, Onder, Richard, Riddle, Rizzo, Romine, Rowden, Sater, Schoff, Schatz, Shoup, Sifton, Sylvie, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson, Whelan.
Senator from the 7th, what purpose do you rise? Senator from the 7th votes aye. Senator from the 15th votes aye. Senator from Johnson.
Aye.
Senator from Johnson votes aye. Senator from the 14th.
Aye.
Senator from the 14th votes aye. By your vote of 33 ayes and 0 noes, Senate Resolution number 85 has been adopted. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you inquire from the Secretary if there are messages from the House? If so, would you ask them to please be read?
There are messages from the House, and Madam Secretary, would you please read the messages?
Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed House Concurrent Resolution 4, entitled An Act Relating to Disapproving of Recommendations of the Missouri Citizens Commission on Compensation for Elected Officials. Also, Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the Speaker has appointed the following committee to act with a like committee from the Senate pursuant to House Concurrent Resolution 2, Representatives McGow, Cornejo, Pike, Corlew, Schreer, Engelbrock, Roberts, Unsicker, Walker 74, and Meredith. Respectfully submitted, Daniel Adam Crumless, Chief Clerk.
Senator from Cole.
Mr. President, without objection, the Senate will go to order business of announcements, and I'd ask you recognize me for an announcement.
Hearing no objections, the Senate will go to the order of business of announcements. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just for the benefit of the body, in a few minutes, I will be making an adjournment motion under the rules. That would mean we'll come in at 10 tomorrow. We will have the state of the judiciary. Do we repair the House? No, we repair to the House on that for the benefit of Mr. Shappy. We will try to get some other business in, introduction of bills if things, you know, go okay, and then we will go to the House and receive the message from the Supreme Court justices, Mr. President. And don't forget about the bowling tournament tonight.
All right. Further announcements. Senator from the 24th, what purpose do you have?
Reminder to the members of the St. Louis Area Regional Caucus, that bipartisan group, we have a meeting tonight starting at 7 o'clock in House Hearing Room 2. Thank you.
Further announcements? Seeing none, Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. No further business coming before the body. I move the Senate stand adjourned under the rules.
Senator from Cole moves that the body stand adjourned under the rules. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate is adjourned under the rules.